But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Welcome to The Wealth Show. I'm Sophie Downs, and I'm joined today by Will Stevens, Head of Wealth Planning at Killick & Co, to discuss their new research about Henrys. For anyone that doesn't know, Henry is the acronym for a group of individuals who classify as high earners, not rich yet. So, Will, besides the acronym, what do Henrys look like in practice?
Thanks, Sophie. Yeah, so I guess with Henrys in practice, what we're looking at are individuals who are aspirational, they're looking to progress their careers, they're earning a decent wage, but perhaps they haven't had that for a long period of time, or they've had other expenses in the way that have prohibited them from building a big asset base to date. So generally, these individuals are professionals, you know, they may be lawyers, accountants, maybe they work in tech, or they might be business owners. But generally speaking, they've got a decent wage, but they just haven't had the, I guess, disposable income to save, to put that away to build the asset base yet.
Mm-hmm. So why did Killick decide to kind of focus on this client group right now? Is this a new occurrence? What's your sense?
So I think there's two factors to that. The first one is, at Killick & Co, we're trying to be the best wealth manager for families. And a lot of these individuals are families. They're individuals who perhaps are young couples with small children who are looking to build and save for their future. And that's really been a key principle of Killick & Co since it was founded, to help people save and invest. And we've always wanted to work with people who are getting started on that journey. And a lot of these Henrys are getting started on that journey.
So you've recently released research on this group. What was the most significant or surprising takeaways for you?
I think the most significant takeaway for me was how people feel the tax system is interfering in their ability to progress their own career. You know, what I found almost quite disappointing in a way, but not disappointing on the respondents, but on the way that it's made them feel, is that almost a fifth of people feel that they should potentially not progress themselves in their career because they don't feel that it's financially worthwhile, or they think it's going to put them in a position where they're actually worse off over time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm interested, because we're talking about, you know, a slightly younger group here in many of the cases. How are things like cost of living, interest rates, property prices shaping their decisions and what they're looking for?
Yeah, I think this has been the key problem probably over the last 4 to 5 years since COVID. We've had a series of impacts that have pushed family finances further and further. So we had a cost of living increase where we had saw quite significant inflation. That was also matched with increases in interest rates. So at the same time that you had, you know, the goods and services you buy on a regular basis going up in price, you also had the cost of mortgages and just living costs generally rising quite significantly. And that's put two pinches on the same group of individuals. That's been compounded by other areas. If you look at potentially VAT on school fees, you know, if you're a family who's got children at private school, a mortgage to pay for and other bills, your costs have gone up and up and up over the last few years. And it can feel a little bit like you're under attack.
Mm-hmm. And is against this backdrop, is home ownership still a key milestone, or are you seeing shifting priorities?
I think the UK is very focused on home ownership as a group of a population, I should say. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look across the world, it differs in region to region, but the UK and the US, home ownership is seen as this huge milestone. You know, it's owning your piece of land, it's owning your part in the world. I think for most people, that is still the ambition. What we are seeing, though, is an increasing trend of individuals who are unable to get onto the ladder in the first instance and find themselves in rentals for longer, potentially because they're not able to save up the money they need for a deposit and they don't have a family who's able to support them with that initial hurdle. And then once people are onto that ladder, potentially they get a little bit stuck because they're not able to make the next move because, again, they're just not able to regularly put money away for what's needed. And I think that's been compounded somewhat by, you know, if you are on the first hurdle, but you've got a mortgage that's got more expensive, how are you saving to get a large deposit for the next place? Because house prices haven't seen a fall in the same way.
And you, I want to go back to the point you mentioned about tax being quite a surprising, or maybe not surprising, but an issue for this group. With the autumn budget in the horizon, obviously we can't make any predictions, but what do you think, if we're taking the lessons we learned last year on the back of that budget, what could the government do differently to kind of ease this growing problem amongst this cohort?
Yeah, I'm not going to make any predictions on what the Chancellor may announce in October. But I think the key thing that we saw last year was twofold. There was a huge sense of uncertainty around what the government was going to do ahead of time. And that potentially leads to individuals making decisions that are not in their best interests because they potentially panic and they make an emotional decision ahead of time. And we did see that last year with a lot of individuals who are maybe closer to retirement taking lump sums from their pension ahead of a potential budget because there was a fear that the tax-free cash element on pensions may be reduced. That didn't end up materializing, but what did end up materializing is individuals making that decision and putting themselves in a possibly worse financial situation off the back of it. I think in that instance, what's really required from the government is clarity on what they're intending to do. They've been quite clear on income tax, national insurance and VAT, but it would be good to get a general sense of what else they're looking to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Now, the topic of Henry's can be quite controversial, largely because people don't always like hearing six-figure earners complaining that their wages aren't going enough. What do you get the sense in your interactions with clients that people might be a bit hesitant to open up about this issue?
Absolutely. We live in a society that probably treats money as a taboo subject. That's changing a little bit over time, and I think people are opening up about that a bit more than they used to, certainly. But generally speaking, it feels a little bit like a first world problem to be complaining about not having enough money but earning a six-figure salary. The difficulty is that's not always relevant to the individual. You know, if you're in a four-person household where you're maybe the only earner because you've got a partner who is at home, who looks after two small children, or doesn't work for another reason, your what ostensibly looks like a large salary in six figures is actually looking after four people. That can be quite material in terms of what's actually affordable for you as a family. And I think going back to the point around the increasing costs that people have seen around living generally, but certainly on the mortgage side, some of those individuals may feel like they're getting a little bit more squeezed. But as I say, you know, there's a fear and a misconception that maybe that that's not something that they can talk about publicly. They feel a bit of an element of, actually, I should be fine because I'm earning a high salary. Whereas actually, in comparison to two individuals who are maybe earning £60,000 a year, living together with no children, but both working, they'd have significantly more available to spend on a monthly basis. So it's difficult to put yourself in other people's shoes. And it's also not fair to, I guess, assume that everyone's in the same financial situation. There are some individuals, for example, and this was highlighted in the research, who are not only supporting themselves and their own family, but also potentially supporting wider members of their family, like their parents. And that's where you get this sort of term of the sandwich generation, people who are helping their children, potentially looking after those, but also maybe having to work at the other end of the family to support their parents who are elderly and may need care, for example.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to come back to that idea of the sandwich generation in particular. But before that, I suppose we should probably answer the biggest question, which is how do we build wealth solutions for this client segment?
This is a growing challenge that's facing the industry, right? I think anyone who works in wealth management understands that historically, the industry has primarily focused on those who have already got an asset base behind them. Those individuals are aging, and it puts us in a position where everyone needs to be thinking about the next generation. How do they get in front of those clients sooner? And how do they build solutions that actually work for those individuals? Because they've got a different set of needs to someone who is 70 and already has their asset base in place. The key here is, and probably hear this a lot in general conversation, is how do you use technology to sort of, I guess, enhance the experience for the client? Because actually they do have different needs and they have a different way of engaging with businesses, but also making the solution more scalable so that as a business, when you're able to work with these individuals, they're potentially not as remunerative on a single basis. But if you can work with enough of them, you can generate a business model that is going to allow you to help more and more people.
Mm-hmm. Should they get wealth managers and advisors at a lower rate, would you say?
A lot of them do, because a lot of the wealth managers and advisors in this industry charge on a percentage basis. And that is going to effectively mean that they're paying less for the service in a pounds and pence format. That being said, I think a lot of advisors are looking at how do they build a solution that is more tailored to maybe individuals who have less complex needs, and can they do something to have a different charging model in place? You know, one of the things we have that we built for those sorts of individuals is a robo-advice offering, which then doesn't come with an advisor. The point of that is to be able to service certain individuals who maybe don't have the complexity of needing to have a conversation with an advisor on a regular basis, but they can still get access to the ability to save and invest regularly so that they can start building that up. When they're then at a stage where things get more complex, or should there be a life event that triggers them to actually need advice, they're already in an ecosystem where they can seek that easily. And the challenge for us, as well as other firms, is to then build on that and make that more comprehensive for individuals. And I think we will see over the coming years that that does change the price point for individuals who have simpler needs but are looking to get started on their journey.
Okay, so going back to your point about the sandwich generation, we hear a lot about the intergenerational wealth transfer, but what tools and practices are you actually using at Killick to help those who are kind of prioritising this issue?
This is a big topic for us in the business. It's something that we discuss on a regular basis, and it's understanding how we can produce a solution that works across multiple generations. So I've already sort of touched on the fact that different generations want different things from their advisors. Traditional clients might want a more hands-on approach. They might want more likely to meet in person, for example, rather than using a digital solution to meet via Zoom or any other sort of video conferencing software. But they're also more likely to engage in a more physical format rather than potentially through digital solutions. So it's important to have services that work across that and be able to tailor what you're delivering to each client as they need it. Then within that, it's about how do you expand the conversation across those generations? Some of the changes that we're seeing from a legislation perspective, particularly around inheritance tax in the budget last year, are really focused on wealth transfer between family members on death. If you want to navigate that effectively, you need to be engaging ahead of time. But it can't just be about one individual's circumstances. It needs to be about the next generation and the generation after that and what's right for everyone. Because if you end up in a situation where, say, you've got grandparents, children and grandchildren, and the grandparents think, we need to move money down a generation, so they just take a bunch of money and drop it down to the kids, what do the kids then do with that? Are they inheriting a lump of money that A, they don't know what to do with themselves, or B, is suddenly a tax burden on them because they haven't been able to plan for it effectively individually? And is it even right for them? Do they necessarily need it, or should it go straight down another generation to the grandchildren? I think the key is to have a big conversation as a group and get together as a collective and begin to, I guess, break down some of that taboo I mentioned earlier around talking about money. As a family, think about what are the individual needs of each group within the family and how can they best be serviced as a whole.
So we've got a group who don't feel wealthy despite their salary, don't invest confidently and often lack full-scale financial advice. How do you get started with clients who may feel like they're not rich enough for full-service planning?
It's a challenge for the individuals themselves and also for the industry. It's trying to get those individuals to engage possibly in a light touch format to begin with and give them the confidence that actually there are solutions there that will work for them. A lot of the work we do is to try and get into the neighbourhoods or working with employers who are able to then put us in front of those individuals earlier in a, I guess, friendlier format. So it's not so focused on, you know, this big, I need to engage with a wealth manager, I need to go in to see them in their office, I need to take time out of my day to deal with that. We've got physical locations, including one not too far from here over on the Northcote Road in Battersea, where we're trying to break down, I guess, the barriers to entry. It's a friendlier environment for individuals to try and walk in off the street, and it's designed to come in and ask a question so that you don't necessarily feel silly, or that you don't necessarily feel that you're disturbing people who are, you know, in the depths of working at their computer. And it's trying to make those conversations around money more accessible. If people come in and ask the first question that's on their mind, you're more likely to then be able to expand that conversation. And that's our challenge as advisors, is to expand that conversation. If someone has taken the time and effort and stepped over the threshold and come in and said, I've got pensions, but I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing, our job is then to say, okay, let's sit down, let's unpack that for you. Let's understand what you've got, what you're doing, and primarily what you're trying to achieve, so that we can then work backwards to, are you doing the right thing? And that might be just a conversation to begin with, but it might be a conversation that leads to, actually, there are these ways we can help you, and let's start to visualize that a bit more. Let's start to model out what your financial future might look like or could look like, and then we can run into some actual advice off the back of that. But the whole point is to have more of these conversations. It's to get in front of more people so that more people are able to ask questions that are potentially at the back of their mind that they're just not feeling confident enough to, I don't know, engage with someone online, or they're not finding the time to do the research required to actually, and it can be a very messy world, go online, look through a bunch of different providers, try and ascertain who's going to be the best, then write to them and ask them your question. That's quite a hurdle to get over. But if you can make it easier for them, you can walk in off the street, you can have a conversation in a non-threatening environment, that's going to be a much easier way to engage with this sort of topic.
Mm-hmm. So really, this seems to be the group the Labour government is targeting when it talks about getting the UK investing. And obviously, we've seen the regulator introduced a host of initiatives to kind of target this client segment, not least targeted support and the advice guidance boundary review. Based on your own interactions with clients, which of these do you foresee as having the greatest impact?
It's a good question, because I think for me, the core to it has always been, we need to educate people more on the benefits of saving and investing. We need to educate people more on the benefits of engaging with their personal finances at an early stage. I think a lot of the work the regulator is doing is designed to improve access by creating low price point entries. But those need to be balanced with, are they going to deliver good outcomes for clients over the long term if they're sort of mass bucket solutions rather than, you know, potentially a more tailored advice option for an individual. I think the key, though, is getting more people engaged in the first instance. The targeted support piece will probably work across two different categories very differently. For those who are approaching retirement who aren't sure what to do, targeted support might provide them with a bit more information about actions they could take and what their retirement could potentially look like. If we look at the other end of the spectrum, which is, as you mentioned, the bit that Labour are trying to get investing, I think encouraging individuals who are potentially sat on large sums of cash to invest is a positive trajectory. There just needs to be an element of caution there about how to think about cash. You know, investing is not right for everyone. The timescales need to be right. You need to be taking a relevant amount of risk for what you're trying to achieve. You need to make sure that you do have enough cash to cover your rainy day. But you also need to make sure that if you're planning on spending money in the next 2 to 3 years, that you're not taking unnecessary risk with that money and, you know, putting it all into the equity market, where, yes, you may generate a return, but over a 2 to 3 year time horizon, you may also lose money.
And as a final question, from the perspective of firms, how can they prepare for this evolving client segment?
It's a good question. And I think what businesses in the industry need to be focused on is twofold: making themselves feel more approachable, so that individuals who are maybe feeling like it's a taboo subject or are unsure whether they are right for seeking advice feel like they can have a space where they can have that conversation in the first instance. And I think the second part is making sure that when firms are focused on delivering to those clients, they do so in a manner that is going to be scalable for them as a business. You know, the aim is to help as many people as possible. In order to do that, we all need to get our cost to serve down a little bit. And that's going to allow us to work with individuals who are potentially what would have been seen historically as lower value, but actually that's where the future is going to be. If you can get in front of these individuals sooner, you can have a greater impact on what their finances are going to look like over the long term. And that's going to come through a variety of things, and everyone always talks about this, but the delivery of greater technology is going to be a key solution here. How do firms bring the technology into the equation so that you're able to give the best of the digital alongside the human experience. I think we're a long way off humans being able to trust fully the digital only solution for particularly complex financial matters. I'm also not necessarily certain that you should be trusting fully digital given some of the answers I've seen out of things like ChatGPT online. But I think the point is advisors need to be empowered by digital solutions to deliver at scale. So the industry needs to modernize, it needs to focus on scale. And ultimately, it also then needs to focus on consumer understanding and education and making sure that people feel empowered to have conversations themselves and that they're coming from a decent understanding in the first instance.
Okay, well, I think that's quite a reassuring note to end on. Thank you very much for joining me, Will.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Wealth Show podcast with Will Stevens. Join us next time.
But today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.